Well, now to some more reflection on how this epochal period in history, the Reformation and its aftermath, shaped the world we live in today. And a little bit later on Saturday Extra, we're going to take you on an unusual traveller's tale with a tour of Reformation sites conducted by a Melbourne man. But we've also sought the views of an historian accustomed to shining a fresh light on big trends, to re-evaluating evidence about what really influenced community psychology at the time and how history played out. Margaret Macmillan emerged as one of the key contributors from all the World War I centenary with her book The War That Ended Peace. Do you remember we spoke to her on Saturday Extra? Well, you can't help draw similarities between then, 100 years ago, now, and long ago in those 1500s. There was turmoil and confusion as certainties certainly evaporated, leading to wars over belief and religion, all amidst dramatic new technology. And it prompted questions that many of us are asking today. Will the centre hold? So I'm delighted that Professor Macmillan took up our challenge to consider the long-tail legacies of the Reformation period on us now. She's Professor of History at the University of Toronto and, until recently, Warden of St Anthony's College at the University of Oxford. Margaret, welcome back to Saturday Extra.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Have you revisited some of your understandings about the Reformation period 500 years ago and how much it was the midwife of the modern world, as some put it?
Yes, because I think there's been so much very good work done on it recently. And I think what is so interesting about the Reformation is it comes at the sort of hinge between the pre-modern world, the medieval world, where people believed in a whole rather different set of values, and the early modern world. And it helps to unleash the individual. People begin to see themselves in a different relationship to God. That's part of what the Reformation is about, is that people are expected to read the Bible for themselves and begin to think for themselves.
Well, indeed. And I mean, even though religion, the word religion, you realise when you look at it, is vastly more than our understanding in a way of religion now. It was really encompassed everything from belief to philosophy to history to economics to codes of conduct, etc. And as one historian, Brad Gregory, has said, in a way, it became not freedom of religion. The consequence turned out to imply freedom from religion and being able to believe whatever you'd like and live however you wish, which has become very obvious in the last half century, as he says. Can you see the origins of it there?
I think the origins are there. It's there in a number of things, because it's also in the spread of capitalism. It's in the changing nature of cities. More people begin to move into cities. But I think, you know, it takes a long time to emerge. And of course, what the Reformation does initially is expect people to remain within a religion. It doesn't undermine religion initially, but what it does is splinter Christian religion.
But, you know, what you did, I think, in The War That Ended Peace, you offered several examples of the disruption to some of the basic assumptions of the time, which probably did contribute to World War One. You know, values were under attack, new attitudes were emerging, hierarchies were collapsing, there was mass media for the first time, really. And this all actually featured during the Reformation, and it seems to be happening today as well.
It does, and it is a worrying time, because these things don't come easily. And the Reformation, of course, was marked by dreadful wars of religion. I mean, what people sort of began to assume was that if someone believed something different from them, that person was evil, and it was quite legitimate to kill them. I mean, I think we saw much more ruthless warfare as a result of the religious changes, because it was about souls, really, and about good and evil.
And so when you do look, as you are inclined to do, and sort of look from to bottom-up history as well as top-down history, and you look at people, I just wonder whether you think that we've made the Reformation far too much about the leaders and actually taken our eyes off the attitudes very much down in society, which, again, I wonder about the current incarnation of that.
Well, there's some very interesting studies being done of the Reformation, because, yes, people have looked at the leaders like Martin Luther, for example, or John Calvin. But what's interesting is that the Reformation and the religious struggles and the Counter-Reformation overlaps with social issues. So you often got groups of people at the bottom edges of society who had not been considered, who had not taken things into their own hands, now organizing themselves and saying, yes, we have a right to be ourselves. And so you get social revolution as well. You get economic revolution.
And what, in terms of the World War One period and the aftermath, do you see some particular turning away from religion at that time that has contributed to today's very different attitude to it in the North? I'm going to come to the difference in the global South in a moment.
That's very interesting, because I think religion plays a very important part in the First World War. But there was already a move towards a more secular society. I mean, you had in France the whole very firm division of church and state. But what also happens, I think, is that nationalism begins to take on some of the features of religion. You begin to get this passionate devotion to a cause which is much bigger than the individual. And again, with nationalism, it becomes okay, at least certain kinds of nationalism, to kill those who aren't like you because they're wrong, they're wicked, they're evil.
So you're entitled to see them in a different light, really. It sort of replaced religion, you're suggesting.
Well, I think it absorbs, yes, I think it does, in a sense, replace religion. It also absorbs some of the features of religion in its absolutist sense. You know, if you are a nationalist and you believe in your ethnicity, then you see the world very much in those terms, very much in black and white, them versus us.
Is it very different today? Because, I mean, today, in the North, there's an incredible scepticism about religion, such the view that it doesn't play a powerful role in setting lots of agendas for a range of reasons. In the South, it's totally different. It's, if anything, emerging even more and more as a force, and that's Christianity, not Islam. Where do you see, or say, have I asked you to compare and contrast the different periods?
Well, I'm not sure I'd say in the North that we're entirely without religion. I think there's always, it seems to me, there was this human desire to understand the meaning of life and to see something beyond our own very short lives. And I think there is a quest for a spiritual meaning, but it perhaps takes different forms than organized religion. And in some countries, in the United States, I mean, you still have these evangelical movements which a lot of people are affected by. So I think I don't know. Perhaps it's a fundamental human need that we want to understand something beyond ourselves and we want some explanation for the world we live in.
But you did remark on the impact of the war on people's sense of whether it was worth believing in anything. And obviously that also occurred partly in the 1500s because there was an unbelievably savage century of wars followed. Just simply millions and millions of Europeans died. It was just the most devastating time in European life. I just wonder what you think the impact on European attitudes, is there a fatalism about conflict? Or is there a belief it could never happen again, which is linked with World War One, I suspect?
Yes, I think what happens too, and perhaps it happens in the wars of religion, is that people finally tire of the violence and begin to think that this is not the way to build a better world. And I think after the First World War, there's also a lack of respect for the leaders, which perhaps is a good thing. People no longer trust the elites as much as they did who got them into the mess. And that perhaps you see something similar in Europe by the 17th century, that, you know, we don't necessarily want to follow those who tell us they've got the answers to everything.
I just have to ask you about the impact on economics, because, again, I wonder if you've reconsidered this. Another German, Max Weber, wrote that the Protestant ethic and the spirit of capitalism, it's been widely debated, though, whether the Protestant Reformation did, in fact, have such influence. Now, as you reconsider these details, what's your verdict?
Yes, I think I've got to go back and read Max Weber because it made a great impression on me when I was younger. But I'm now, perhaps I'm older and more cynical. I don't believe in single explanations. I think shifts in belief can contribute to social change, but there are many things going on at any one time. And other things were happening in Europe. And you've got perfectly good Catholic capitalists as well doing very well. So I don't think it was just Protestantism that fueled the development of modern capitalism.
So when you do reflect on the Reformation, and some people suggest there's a counter-Reformation in the global South actually underway right now, in particularly Christianity, that might shock people in the Northern Hemisphere because it's certainly not a sort of Vatican II Christianity. Do you think we ought to be reconsidering the whole impact of the Reformation on our lives?
I think we always should be reconsidering things. And when I was young, because I grew up in a Protestant world, we were taught that the Reformation was a wonderful thing. It was liberating, it was freeing, it got us out of the dreadful, corrupt Catholic Church. But now looking back at it, the more I read about it, there were pushes for change within the Catholic Church long before the Reformation, and I think it's perfectly possible to see the Reformation as something that was destructive, that might have gone in a different direction. What it did, amongst other things, in destroying the monasteries, is it destroyed a whole system of social care, and people who had been looked after and fed by the religious orders suddenly were left on their own because the monasteries, at least in the case of Britain, had been dissolved.
But you, as a Canadian, might well not have even... Your forebears may not have ended up in North America at all if it hadn't been for the Reformation. I mean, there was just simply staggering scale of change in terms of people's attitudes, wasn't there?
Oh, yes, there was. And I think some of that might have come anyway, because there was also the rediscovery of Greek and Latin learning in the Renaissance. And so there were other ways of thinking. And there were people within the church who found very Protestant in the terms of the Reformation, and so there was shifts in thinking, and people were beginning to take an interest in science, and that was not necessarily incompatible with religion, although there were often tensions.
Well, Margaret McMillan, thank you very much indeed for taking up our challenge to rethink it. I do appreciate your time.
Well, you do offer challenges. I'm not sure I can deal with them, but thank you.
Margaret McMillan. She's now at the University of Toronto, where she's Professor of History. She's a former warden of St. Anthony's College at the University of Oxford, and we'll have details of her work on our website.